Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Swung on, lined to deep left field. It is gone! It went deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 180. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, talk about Josh Naylor's injury on Sunday, talk about Oscar Mercado and Logan Allen coming back to the team, the current pitching situation, and which of the several pitchers that are here that weren't to start the year, which we think will stick around, talk about Franmil Reyes, Roberto Perez potentially returning soon, and also that I guess we'd include Zach Plesac. He's rehabbing as well, so a lot of guys coming back soon. We'll talk about them, what they could mean for the lineup, just a general Bobby Bradley discussion, because you have to have a Bobby Bradley discussion because he's so good. He hits the ball so damn far. And we'll talk about Jose Ramirez not in the All-Star voting finals, which is a crime against humanity. And maybe it doesn't matter at all. But also, I kind of care about it too much. And of course, I'll have a meatball for you because you've got to have meatballs. Joining me for all that and more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, man. Always a great time being here talking with you. Baseball.
Merritt, I'm really sweaty. That's all I got for you this morning.
Oh, you're really morning, sweaty? But, yeah. It's a hot one.
I got this. I guess it's a cheap desk. It must not be very good because I like stick to it. I don't like it.
I think that's all desks. It could be sign of a good desk because it's made of real wood. Who knows? Oh,
it's definitely not a good desk because everything sticks to it and like rips up the stuff. So
I'm sticking to my desk right now. That's for sure. I'm avoiding ways to touch it right now.
This may be our stickiest episode of Covering the Corner.
It is. Yeah. Welcome to. Yeah, I got nothing.
I mean, I wish we could watch Cody Anderson or, you know, I already forgot the wood guy's name.
The wood guy? Hunter Wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, the wet guy.
They'd be like pitching today. Yeah, they would be.
I don't think Underwood was ever I think he was ever a sweaty guy. He was a wet guy. Sweaty guys are more your Cody Andersons or your, this was really sweaty.
He's the first one that comes to mind for me.
Justin Masterson got really sweaty there for a while because he had this big shiny head. What's his name? Mike Napoli was a good sweater. And he's always had his shirt like half on, but that's a moist man right there. Thank God they invented these delightfully wicking technology they have in the modern uniforms. Otherwise, imagine the pit stains on some of these guys. Ooh wee!
You know what else wicks the sweat, Merritt?
Not what you're about to say, but whatever. Go on.
Meatballs, Merritt. Meatballs make wick the sweat. This is, of course, our meatball section where we talk about fun little things that happened over the last week of games. I don't have one this week, but I know you do. So Merritt, what's your meatball, your fun little tidbit of what happened in Cleveland baseball over the last week?
Well, this is a more of a general one, but it also ties into something that's happening soon. As we all know, correlation equals causation. And so, in light of that, I want to talk about something I discovered on Baseball Savant today. So when you use their search feature, for those who don't know and who don't use it all the time, if you're searching for a certain pitch and you select the quote-unquote shadow of the plate, they just define that as kind of on the black, as it were, right? The place that's just on the edge of the strike zone. It is good to pitch here because it's harder to hit in that area than it is in the heart of the plate because it's further away from the heart of the plate and at a different angle, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's where that's why we marvel at things like what Shane Bieber can do, just kind of dot the edge constantly. Anyway, I was curious to see how different Cleveland starters do when it comes to throwing pitches in the shadow of the plate. And your top three, Matt, are Aaron Civale at 44.3%, Zach Plesac at 43.1%, and Tristan McKenzie at 41.5%, which tells me that if you throw the pitches in the shadow of the plate, you're going to get hurt. And that's what I've learned.
So that the shadow is actually bad?
It's bad. Stay away from the shadows. No, but in all honesty, I thought it was neat that 4 and 5 on this list are actually Logan Allen and Eli Morgan. Watching Morgan start, was that last week? I think it was.
The one where he was okay and not bad. Yeah, that was last week.
Yeah, I was honestly, I'll say this. I know we're going to get into this a little bit later, but I was very impressed by him. I know he gave up a home run on Monday night to Miguel Cabrera. Miguel Cabrera is not Miguel Cabrera anymore, but he's still, you know, very good. And, I mean, the pitch was a high changeup. Morgan's got a great changeup, but the fact of the matter is if you throw even a great changeup, unless you're apparently What's his name on the White Sox? His
Lucas Giolito.
I can't remember. That's the one. I was like, it's a Q or a G? I can remember. I can remember the shape of the letter. I was like, what is that?
Wasn't that a slider he had? Or was I looking at the wrong one?
Well, he throws that constant changeup up in the, I don't know, tonight or on Monday night when he gave up the home run. It looked like a changeup to me. I don't know. I only looked at it a couple times. But it looked like it was the right speed and movement of his change. But anyway, his ability to work generally the outside of the zone and dot stuff, even though he only throws like 91, 92. I'm very encouraged by this, and we've been saying it over and over and over. One of these young pitchers has to work out just by like process of elimination, right? It's not like it can't be like the universe is like going to curse Cleveland now. Like, here's three good pitchers. Now you get none forever. Eventually, one of these guys is going to pay off. And seeing that kind of command and having a very good changeup, I think it really can lend oneself to being a good pitcher. But and other than that, yeah. Logan Allen's also on that, and as we've seen so far, he's not that good. But
yeah, he's coming back though. He was. I mean, we can just talk about the pitchers now because I mean, it's a natural transition anyway. And I mean, but yeah, it's not that they're cursed, like you said. I think they're fine. Like all these pitchers, we're what, like 10 pitchers deep, and we're still to the point where we have at least a guy who has an elite looking changeup in the minors, and it might be in the majors. And then we have like Jason Mejia, who looks like he's been pretty decent sometimes. Sam Hedges, who just looks like he should be a reliever or a fifth guy, but. I mean, at least these guys aren't coming out and not looking like major league pitchers. Like considering how deep they are in their rotation at this point, it's still something that they have. And when everybody gets back healthy, when they have Bieber, Savali, and Plesac, and hopefully Tristan McKenzie works out whatever his problem is, then these guys can just come up when they're actually ready. And I think this could even just help them coming up and getting this brief shot. And whether they're bad like Sam Hedges or showing some promise like Eli Morgan, if they're going to go back down and work, they know what. Or they have a better idea of what works in the majors and what they need to work on down there. So I think at the end, this season will help their pitching stuff altogether, especially when not everybody's destroyed like they are now. But it's the way we were going to talk about this basically was, is there one, if you had to pick one to stick around between the starters now, which I guess would be Mejia, Cal Quantrill, Eli Morgan. I guess we can count Logan Allen in there. Sam Hedges. I don't think it's going to be Sam Hedges, but of those guys that are starting now, who do you think is the one most likely to stick around? I mean, is it Eli Morgan or is there somebody else who you think is more likely to be a starter?
I would say, I mean, the thing, you know, I watch Jason Mejia and I like what I see a lot of times. It's just, he can't seem to get out of the first inning, I think is, I don't know. And that's such like a nitpicky kind of a thing, but it's just like, he doesn't seem to have an out pitch to get him out of that first inning and then be able to kind of motor on. And I don't know whether it's just a lack of command or a lack of having anything really overly useful. So I want to say him, but at this point, I think it probably has to be Eli Morgan only because he has demonstrated, I think, more recently, and he's shown some growth from one year, you know, from one start to another. I don't know. I trust him a little bit more, but that's not to say that I don't think JC Mejia can't be a valuable pitcher. I mean, his peripherals are, you know, I mean, we're talking about guys who have 20 and 30 innings pitched, but like, you know, his peripherals aren't terrible. He's a 3.27 fielding independent pitching, a whip in the 1.1s. He's striking out just under one guy per inning. He's not giving up home runs. I've cut his walk rate just a little bit. Then we're talking about, I think, a pretty good pitcher, right? Not like a frontline guy, but like you said, we're not looking at guys who are supposed to be frontline guys right now anyway. We're looking at guys who, in a normal year, would be swing starters and guys to come up to give someone a breather or to take care of the rotation while one pitcher is on the 10-day IL, right? Not when three and then the fourth guy just kind of can't figure anything out. Another guy. Yeah, so I think my answer, quite honestly, is probably still Eli Morgan, but I think kind of, you know, running down behind it might be JC Mejia. I'd like to see, I mean, I by the time this podcast is over, I'll have a better sense of Eli Morgan because I'll have another start under his belt. And even if it's against a not great offensive team, I think part of what's benefited Cleveland pitchers over the last couple of years is the fact that the division's been so god awful. They've kind of baby steps into facing major league pitching, if that makes sense. And so, like, there's a couple of good hitters on every team, but like, they can, if you can figure out how to navigate them and then figure everything else out, you can become elite over time.
Yeah, and we'll know more about Eli Morgan too after his next start. It's the Astros on Saturday. So,
at that point,
if he can do something there, then
no.
I'm sure he's going to get destroyed.
Good at hitting in that team.
Because, I mean, the whole schedule is brutal coming up. So, we're going to find out about him and everybody else on this team. They play, like, I think it's the Astros twice, the Rays twice, they play the A's. The White Sox. Like July is just going to be absolutely brutal for the whole pitching staff. But I agree that Morgan's probably one of the ones that looks like the best. He's the one I want to succeed the most just because he's different. He's the small guy who throws a really fun changeup. It's just so the movement on it is just crazy compared. I mean, it works so well, even though he doesn't throw a hard fastball, which is neat. He also works extremely fast, which is really cool. Like we saw these first couple innings against Detroit, even with the home run, like he just gets up there, he goes, he pitches, he gets the next pitch, goes, pitches. Like he is not a guy who would be worried about a pitch clock. Well, that's just fun to me is throwing, potentially throwing hitters off. They have to work to slow him down because he's always so quick to get the ball to the plate. But I also think like he has issues with breaking balls. They're not good yet at all. His changeup, like you said, he gets it up too much. He does have issues, but I think those are all fixable things that
he can fix,
perfectly fine for like a fifth guy. Yeah. The main one I was going to say was Mejia. I've really liked some of the stuff we've seen from him. It is weird that he doesn't get out of the first inning. Like even when he has a perfectly fine outing, he still pitches like 30 pitches in the first inning.
I can't figure it out. And just seems like every time I've seen him pitch, it's like he's grinding ass first innings. You're like, I'm going to bite my own tongue off.
it looks terrible. And you think he's going to be a bad outing, then he somehow gets out of it.
Because he doesn't have that pitch, right? He doesn't have anything huge, any one huge thing or even something moderately good, which much like what you mentioned with Morgan, will come in time, I think, once he understands how his different pitches work with each other and, you know, works with the team to kind of shape his repertoire, one would hope, into a more aesthetically pleasing manner that tricks pitchers a bit better or hitters a bit better.
And he does have sort of like one of the things I look for now, like now that we have Baseball Savant, is if you've ever used their pitch arsenal thing, you can see a really detailed image of how their pitches play off each other because you can see the pitch movement and all that. Like he has one that looks, I'm not going to say it's extremely similar, but it looks kind of like Shane Bieber's from last year, where Mejia would want to have maybe a little less horizontal movement on a slider, get it more up and down like his curveball. And then like if he gets a cutter instead of the sinker or something, like if he does something that Aaron Civale did and just get rid of that sinker and go with a cutter and that fits up, then he has pitches coming everywhere and breaking everywhere and he could fool batters a lot easier, I think, than using that sinker, which is essentially the same movement as a changeup. But faster, and it still gets hit, so it's not probably helping him a whole lot. So that's one thing I like about him is he looks like he's coming up the same path that like Shane Bieber and all these other guys did, having a similar movement profile. I mean, obviously it's more than just that. He's got to be able to tunnel like they do, but I think there is something really interesting there with him. I also think we can't give up on Cal Quantrill yet, or I can't anyway, because I think he's just, I love the two-seamer movement he has.
I know they were talking about how he's so much better as a reliever than as a starter. So he's trying to do there was an article, I think it was in The Athletic, where he's trying to kind of do the Carlos Carrasco thing. But like, he's just been so bad as a starter. it's so depressing. Cause like, I wanted to
be good against the Pirates. He was really good against the Pirates, man. Yeah. I mean, it's the Pirates. So that was the point there. He wasn't good against a good team, but I mean, he was okay against Baltimore, which is a team that crushes Cleveland for some odd reason, but I mean, against the Minnesota, he got shelled, but he had a couple.
Like, I know it's a sample size. I'm talking about combined 18 innings as a starter and 28 as a reliever. But that's like a 100-point difference in OPS. I don't know. I mean, I guess the thing is we're splitting hairs. Like I mentioned before, we're talking about guys who have 18 innings, 33 innings. How many innings has he pitched this year so far? Not 47 innings. I mean, the sample sizes aren't great to make huge judgments, sweeping opinions or anything here like this, but...
Yeah, and now was I being too mean to Sam Hentges, or is it just feel like he's just kind of there because they didn't have anybody? I mean, he was like the first one up in the round of deeper guys, but man, he does not look good. His fastball is just extremely hittable. He can pump it up there, but it does nothing, and it just gets killed. And I just don't see. I would love to have a lefty throwing. What does he throw? Does he hit the 990s? I'm pretty sure he gets up.
Yeah, 97, 98. I guess the thing.
Like, I would love to have a lefty like that, but it does not look good so far.
Like I wrote about the other, you know, a couple weeks ago. Like he's the antithesis of your typical Cleveland pitching prospect. You know what? Like, we expect Eli Morgan. We don't expect Sam Hentges, and it's weird that both of them aren't working. But I don't know. I think he's also one that this time will help him because he'll see that you can't just overpower. Like, shoot, go watch what's his name? Oh my god, he's on the Yankees. Garrett Cole. He throws 100 miles an hour. But he got crushed his last time out. I mean, at the same time, we can talk about Jacob DeGrom, but he's a freak of nature, so whatever.
Yeah, like you can try to be Jacob DeGrom. It doesn't quite go that well. I mean, I'd be a little happy if Sam Hantges was Jacob DeGrom. I'd be a little.
Listen, why not? But, what's to stop him other than physical ability and the luck of everything else?
But yeah, I still think he's going to be a reliever at some point. Like if he can throw that hard and throw even harder, he just needs his fastball and curveball and off to go. But like the slider and changeup are just not there for him. And I think he'd be a perfectly fine 2-pitch pitcher who can give you a couple innings out of the bullpen, but we'll see. And it's neat that they at least have all these guys who they're going to get their shot now and then go back down when everybody's healthy and hopefully know what to work on and come back. And one of those guys obviously is Logan Allen, who went down early. He was before everybody was injured. That's back in the before times when we thought everything was fine. And
he was in the rotation opening day. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he was just the extra arm back there. He was just good at a spring training. Just let him give it a shot. We got so many pitchers, who cares? And then all of a sudden everything collapsed. But he went down to AAA after really terrible starts in the majors. Had some really bad starts in Columbus. Eight earned runs in 6-inning pitch, 7 earned runs in 1.1 in the other game.
17.2 innings pitch, 23 earned runs, whip into twos. What's going on here?
He's not looking good at all. And then he was injured, missed a bunch of games. Hasn't pitched since June 18th, but now he's up. He's either going to be used. Obviously, by the time this podcast comes out, we'll know. But he'll either be used out of the bullpen tonight or he'll start Thursday, which, again, this is just a thing where they're digging for these arms. I wrote in the series preview, they're not just scraping the bottom of the barrel. They're, like, turning it over and looking on the bottom of it and seeing if they can find anybody who can throw a ball. And I think they're just kind of hoping Logan Allen, he didn't show that he figured anything out in the minors. I guess they just have to use somebody else, and he's the next one up because there just isn't anybody else. They signed somebody else today who they're going to use eventually. Some guy was on the Brewers. I already forgot his name, but I'm sure we'll see him at some point. I mean, they're just digging. I think the next guy is what, like Kirk McCarty down there in AAA. So I hope Logan Allen figured it out. And I hope the break from the elbow inflammation, maybe that was giving him issues both in the majors and especially for his terrible minor league starts. And maybe he's recovered from that and better. But we're looking at him up now. And also Oscar Mercado, who's coming up, because we should probably talk about what happened to Josh Naylor first, which was.
I guess we can for a moment.
Yeah, because that was not good. That was the defining thing of, I mean, Cleveland lost, but it really didn't matter because if no, you didn't see it yet, you probably don't want to look it up. But
Cal Quantrill broke his leg anyway.
it broke doesn't even describe it the way it looked because he and Ernie Clement were going for a ball. Francona said after the game that Naylor probably should have called for it, but it was just a freak accident. I mean, this happens all the time where relievers and infielders run into each other. It usually doesn't happen the way it did. Just the way they contacted Josh Naylor, spun around and landed on his ankle in the worst possible way. At full speed, I didn't think anything happened, but he landed on it and then he was flopping around like really hard and it was clear he was in a lot of pain. He was calling everybody to come over as soon as they could. It was just an awful situation. Ernie Clement felt terrible. He had to be consoled by Harold Ramirez on the way back. Just a really bad situation all around. And then they knew right away something was broke. Clearly, looking at the video, it was, but they found out afterwards when he went to the hospital. And now we know he's on the 10-day DL now, which is clearly just the way they do it. Later on, he'll be on the 60-day DL when they need the slot. But yeah, it's a terrible loss. I mean, just he was finally starting to put it together, I think, on the field. His WRC Plus got up to like 90, something like that. And more than that, he was just the guy in the clubhouse is always great. He had that the thing where he was cheering on Paul Hoynes when he figured out Zoom. Like, that was just a look, and I'm sure how enthusiastic he is in the clubhouse. Because Paul Hoynes, the Cleveland.com writer, I guess he always has a problem unmuting himself, and he finally got it, and Josh Naylor was cheering him on in the Zoom call, and that was really fun. So I'm sure that's just the kind of thing that the players see all the time from him, but now that's either going to be gone or it's going to be a guy on crutches back there helping him out. But I feel terrible for Josh, bad for the team, because I think he was on his way to helping them a lot, and now they don't have him.
Yeah, it's a huge bummer. Like you said, in the last 2 weeks, he had an 894 OPS. He's fun to watch. One of the guys that you – I don't know, you know, I mean, we all admitted it's a rebuilding season of some kind, and he's a guy who has a lot of fun tools and seems like a really neat guy, and I don't know, good vibes off him constantly, and everyone seems to like him. There was someone was talking about, I think on Twitter, about how when something happened, and he was a major source of positive energy within the clubhouse, as you mentioned before. I don't know, that's a very nice half-remembered story right there.
I think it's definitely true. I think he was on the way to being like the Mike Napoli guy, but a guy who could probably play better than Napoli did toward the end of the season. So, yeah, no, I mean, he was the clubhouse guy as far as you can tell from the outside.
Just seeing him start to put together is always exciting. that just sucks. He's hurt. I mean, there's two of these nailers in the system. I want them both to work out because that'd just be fun and funny. And one hopes that a broken leg isn't that big of a deal. I know, obviously, it definitely kind of slows down his development process because he can't play baseball and he has to rehab now and all that stuff. So, one hopes it's something, you know, don't have to think about the injury anymore. It's just, you know, we get to see him play next year. You know, like they said, 6 months, something like that, too, for healing and everything like that. He's probably going to have to get some surgery and stuff like that. But,
oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Medicine is good these days. And so maybe we'll just, you know, fix him and he'll be fine.
It was a closed fracture and dislocation was the official thing, which means the bone didn't come out of the skin or anything, but the bone in there is just broken. I obviously not a doctor, but I figured that's gotta be the better news than breaking your tibia or your fibula or something down there. So I guess it depends on how severe the actual break is, I guess, but as far as what happened and seeing it and what it looked like, I guess
it looked awful. News. God. I know it wasn't one of those really awful breaks, with having that kid in the NCAA tournament that time. That was horrendous. Or Paul George or anything like that. But still, it looked like he was flopping around there and he looked, I don't know. It was crushing because he's, 23, 24, something like that?
Yeah, he's still really young.
He just turned 24 6 days ago, actually. So that blows. And I hope he comes back as strong as ever because he's a big, strong dude and one of those guys who you could see being around for a while. And I think I wrote about it a little while back. He's the kind of player that you just kind of root for and becomes kind of a fan favorite, even if he's not he'd be a guy. My dream was him being a 125, 130 WRC plus kind of a guy. Not stupendous, but very good. And, eventually gets paid a ton, but also just isn't really a star for a while, but is definitely a beloved player within the system and the fan base. And I don't think that's ending by any stretch of the imagination. I think he'll bounce back perfectly fine because he's still young. And like I said before, medicine is incredible. We're seeing guys like Tom Brady play until they're 47 years old or whatever. And he plays in a sport where you get run into every time.
Yeah.
Plus, he's a hockey fan, so and they're very tough.
He's a Canadian boy.
He's Canadian, tough, so he's coming back. As Don Cherry once said, a good Canadian boy. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was clear he was going to be gone for a while, so they did have to call somebody up. They went with Oscar Mercado, which I think that alone is a conversation starter because that is a choice that they made. They have a lot of options. Who are all these guys that are just kind of similar levels right now? I think Oscar Mercado is maybe on the lower end of the ceiling at this point, because Dino Johnson's ceiling might be higher. Nolan Jones, I think, is way higher. But this is who Cleveland picked. He was obviously bad the last time he played. He's terrible for Cleveland. They went down AAA. He's not been great down there. He was sort of hitting really well, and then he got hit in the face by a pitch, which was just never good. He went down, and he was bad after that. And I mean, for a guy who, he admitted in the past that some of his issues were just mental, which I completely get, and I wonder if, just getting hit in the face of the ball just sort of messed with his head a little bit, and maybe he can just shake out of that and be back to hitting well. I don't know, but yeah, he's up now in the majors, and I guess, are you happy to see him instead of,
I don't know,
Johnson or Nolan Jones or
listen, the positive here is, I guess, he'll play right field and Bradley Zimmer, I assume, will maintain center. Defensively,
where are you putting Big Harold? What are you doing to Big Harold over there?
Oh shit.
I would assume either Zimmer or Mercado's the fifth outfielder.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Fourth, fifth
kind of. I don't know. I kind of feel like Mercado's a known quantity at this point. And maybe he can figure it out. He's still very young. But I kind of feel like he got his shot. Why not? I don't mean to bring this up every time we talk about the outfield, but what is it about Daniel Johnson that doesn't allow him to have an opportunity to play baseball in the major leagues?
I think they just have seen something that's, he had that 5 strikeout game and he looked miserable, but you can't judge it off the couple games. But I think they've seen something that is a tip off to them that he's just going to be bad at this point. So,
I mean, he's improved every year he's been in the minors, basically, is the thing too. He's almost hit better at every level. Outside of one season in single A and high A, his best hitting season basically is in triple A. Not this year. He only has a 75 OPS.
Yeah, it's not very good this year.
But, last year he was great, and I don't know.
It's, but, I mean, there's lots of guys who do that, and then they hit AAA, and then they hit the majors, and they fizzle out.
I know. Let me just dial up outfielders for the Cleveland Indians.
You don't have to look back very far.
But,
I mean, if it's if it's not the case where they've seen something, it's just malpractice at this point because they're not getting any service time out of him. He's 25. Who cares? Like, it's clearly they don't believe he can do it, and maybe he'll be the next Jesus Aguilar and go somewhere. But it's got to be something extremely blatant at this point that he can't do. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and it's not like there's some other shining star of a potential good outfielder out there. I know you're going to say Nolan Jones, but like, I don't want him in right field. He's an infielder by trade. Only the place you could put him would be. I mean,
cut that guy at third base and just play him over there.
Oh, that's true. Good point. I don't know. I mean, but in all honesty, like dumping Eddie Rosario or something like that is a move I'd be completely fine with. But like that's someone you don't want to call up only because you want him to get at bats. And maybe that's part of it too, is they don't want to call up Daniel Johnson and make him sit on the bench because maybe they just think at this point him getting at bats is what he needs to hone his craft, right? Like maybe this is the reverse of what I'm talking about. This is, we'll ask him Ricardo. We know what he is. He's bad, but we're just going to use him because we don't want to, you know, not so much burn options as not give guys like DJ an opportunity to grow or Nolan Jones an opportunity to get at bats every single day. Or, you know, like it's obvious that there's guys that they want when they have a hole. There's guys they want to give opportunities to. Like Owen Miller, he played a ton. And they're like, you know what?
We're going to just shuffle you back down there. Can you go away now? This was fun. But
like, you know, it's like it's obvious that they were trying something. They wanted to see, give him an honest chance, right? And Mercado's gotten that honest chance. They know what he does. And so now they're just like, well, we need a warm body at this point. Like the starting outfield is kind of locked in day to day. And we just need to kind of piece together outside of that. Like, he is competent. He can lay down a bunt sometimes. And at the end of the day, like, what else are we – like, he can come in the eighth, seventh, or eighth and play for whoever, you know. So it's a role that needs filling, and he's there to do it.
Yeah, at this point, I guess they just like Bradley Zimmer walking a ton and then running fast. I don't know
what else they
see in him because – there's nothing else there. Like, he too is a known quantity and not a great one. But
listen, man, 360 on base percentage and just running fast. Let's take it every single day. Yes.
224 his batting average and slugging it as of before Monday night's game is the same, which is
one day he'll hit a double, maybe.
He'll get there. You're doing good, bud. But yeah, I don't know. There's something there, at least I think, with him. And that's probably why. Like, if they don't think maybe they just don't think Daniel Johnson can even hit that level right now, and it'd be better off keeping Bradley Zimmer in there. Like you said, just give Mercado a warm body.
Well, again, like they're not
wasting anything.
I don't think they have space because they're not going to get rid of Eddie Rosario right now. They're not just going to cut bait. They spent money on him. And, you know, I mean,
some cost flips the bat on ground rolls, on ground balls. And that's hilarious.
That rule. That was the coolest thing that's happened to this team all year.
It legitimately might be. Like, if anybody didn't know, like, when he played the Twins and they walked Jose Ramirez to load the bases, he hit a ground ball that happened to get by the shortstop, and he flipped his bat dramatically and stared down.
It was a cool one.
The rocket ball,
man. That was so cool.
I don't know if he just didn't care, or he thought maybe it wasn't a ground ball somehow, or he was just looking to flip his bat. But that was great.
Or he's just the coolest guy on earth. I don't know. But then the Caleb Ramirez is playing well. Like, honest to God, playing well. He's one of the best hitters on the team right now. So you're not going to get rid of him. And Bradley Zimmer's, you know, whoever the other guys are not center fielders. So
yeah, I mean, Bradley Zimmer has a tool. He has speed. Like, I don't know if you can say that about Mercado or necessarily even Daniel Johnson besides his arm at this point right now. But
What's his name? Zimmer is a great defensive center fielder, and like, for a very flawed team, we need some, and with a pitching staff that's pieced together with Twine and Hope, like, they need things to make it a little bit easier on them. And so having a great defensive center fielder and a good infield, they need these things. So it's just tough because we want the team to be good, and we've been hearing all these young guys' names for forever. Like, how many of these guys have played, like, the MLB Futures games and all this kind of stuff? Where are they? Give me one. This. Another give.
That is, like, but then this year on this team, you get guys like Bobby Bradley who might not get a chance if they, like, had Edmund and Encarnacion in his prime. And you get these guys who he is just so damn fun because he hits the ball. What is his max exit velocity? Like, 114 miles per hour is his hardest hit this year. And I mean, he's doing it right now. It's not like three games anymore. This is, what are we up to?
19 games, 62 at bats. I mean, he's hitting, you know, this is the batting line I was talking about. 226,
this is exactly it.
304, 548. You're like, all right, man, yeah, get on base 30% of the time and hit dingers. Let's do it.
I mean, striking out less than 30%, like, that's fine. Like, if he does this forever, his BABIP's going to go up probably 222 right now.
Yeah, the thing is, he hits the ball very hard, very hard. And what more do you want? 6 home runs and out of 14 total hits. This is a trend I like. Let's keep on doing it.
And I do. I mean, I got what Cleveland was doing, keeping Jake Bowers because he was out of options, but it looks mighty stupid now because Bobby Bradley looks really good. I saw an article on the fan-sided Mariner site that asked if other teams gave up on Jake Bowers too soon. And I quietly responded to myself, nope, I don't think they did. I think they gave him plenty of chances, especially Cleveland. The very end of his rope, they could go with him.
99 OPS plus with the Mariners. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess.
Which, I mean, good. Still is not, it's not great. I mean, it's good for the Mariners. You got him for free.
Yeah.
Like, that's an average hitter who's you got for nothing. So good for them. But I also am not upset that Cleveland let him go to have Bobby Bradley with his half unbuttoned shirt hitting balls 7,000 feet.
He's a fucking cool guy.
It's very cool. That's the other thing. He's just so damn cool. I don't know how he is. I haven't seen like flashy things at first base. I haven't seen terrible things, so I don't know. It's not like Carlos Santana where you could tell he was really good. Like, is he just decent over there?
He's fine from what I can tell. You know, he can stretch and do splits and make some plays and whatever. You
catch that ball, right? There you go.
Yeah, he has good guys who can, you know, I mean, he benefits from having good, you know, defenders throwing it to him. Jose Ramirez's arm isn't what it used to be, so, you know, it'd be nice if he was a little bit better, but what are you going to do?
Yeah,
I don't think he's blown plays yet.
Yeah, that's really all you want, like a first baseman who hits home runs. Like,
yeah, just be normal. Just be there. Just be fine. Be all right.
Now, is that that totally weakened, depleted, ruined arm, is that the reason that fans clearly recognize that Jose Ramirez is over the hill and not worthy of a final spot in the All-Star vote? Through this convoluted system that MLB has for voting for the All-Star, which is ridiculous, the first round is you just vote for every position. You can put whoever the hell you want in there. And then there's 3 finalists, and then there's round 2, and then you vote for that. And then is there another round? I don't know. But we're close to the end, apparently, in voting now. And Cleveland has nobody in the finals for any position, which I think it was kind of sad seeing the social media team try to promote. I think they were going with Jose, Cesar Hernandez, and Franmil Reyes as the 3. And like 2 of them were injured, and the other was Cesar Hernandez, who was bad. So,
what did we talk about when they signed Cesar Hernandez last year? Top 10 for second baseman.
I don't know about that. So,
well, you know, but the time. Again, yeah. Go look at second baseman rankings. Bereft. It is a dead position. It's amazing how crappy it is.
Yeah. But, I mean, the 3 they got are good. I mean, Jose Altuve, DJ LeMahieu isn't quite as good, but Marcus Semien. Like, those are the top 3. I don't think you're going to. Then
that's true. Then it falls into it falls into a hole almost immediately. And so that's why, by default, top 10. But it does. I don't know. I understand, in a way, why. Ramirez isn't getting a lot of love. I mean, again, Cleveland.
Go on, confirmed Jose Ramirez hater. Explain why he's not going to be an All-Star voting.
Let me just do a quick stat lookup.
What is
Let's see.
Yeah, I know he leads or he's second among all third basemen.
You know what? Yeah, why isn't he a finalist in this?
Thank you,
Joey Wendell. Get out of my get this crap out of here.
I mean, he's
better than Yoan Moncada. Hands down, he's better than Yoan Moncada. Maybe not this year. Good Lord, Yoan Moncada's having a great year. Gee whiz. Although he's only slugging 393? What?
Yeah. And Alex Bregman should not be in the top 3. Like, Yoan Moncada, maybe. I get it. I see it. But Alex Bregman, that's just because he's on the Astros and they're popular, I guess. Yeah.
Alex Bregman, get out of here.
Get him out of here. But, I mean, Rafael Devers clearly, I think, should win it anyway because he has been ridiculously good. Yoan Moncada, sure, fine, whatever, up there, even though he's not slugging, like you said. But Jose Ramirez should be up there, damn it. I mean, like, he's got to be – he's one of the best hitting third basemen. He's Jose Ramirez. I mean, I haven't seen any – remember back – I guess this might be just lingering pandemic stuff, but when they did all the fun promotions with Lindor and Ramirez around the All-Star game and they had the ads with the glasses and stuff, I haven't seen a damn thing besides just, like, generic stuff they're doing. Just, like, vote Jose, and then that's it. We're done. Like, I guess like nobody can do video promotions anymore because you can't get that close of access. But that was the only fun thing about the All-Star game to me, was those weird little things.
I guess it doesn't really help it, even over the last month.
It probably doesn't, but I mean,
he's not doing great. I mean, you know, immediately after an article about how he's about to break out, and he's just been bad. But
yeah, he's been inconsistent, I guess, which if you're going to get votes, you got to be at least consistent. And,
well, you know,
people just got to, yeah.
He's never consistent as it is. He's an ebb and flow kind of a guy. And I think, I mean, something's going to happen soon where he's going to light on fire. He's probably just tired because he plays so many goddamn games. probably dinged up a little bit. Honestly, maybe it'll be good for him. He needs a couple of days off. I mean, but, I don't know. The guy
this also brings up the question. Don't they have to have an all-star? Isn't that a rule? Every team has to have one?
Yeah, I think so. I wish it wasn't a rule, but
Send for Cleveland?
I would say, when you get to a level like this, you end up sending a pitcher, quite honestly. And they're probably going to say Class A.
Or Karinchak, I guess.
I guess
it's going to be,
one of those guys. I mean, honestly, I would say that Class A is the most astonishing player on the team.
And yeah, he'd be more fun in an all-star game because of that wicked cutter, but...
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, outside of him, I mean, I guess the only other answer would be Ramirez, just because Franmil missed all this time. I think Franmil would have given people a run for their money if he had been healthy this whole time, because he would have hit 24 home runs already, and they would have just been, these skyscraping bombs. I think he would have finally... I think by now, with it heating up now, I think he would have finally hit the scoreboard.
Oh, did you see that home run he hit in Columbus?
Oh my God. What the hell?
That is a major league type park, and he destroyed it in the left
part
of the
game. I can't wait for him to come back.
He's going to hit that scoreboard. It's going to happen.
He is going to hit that scoreboard. I mean, maybe not this year, but maybe next year it's going to happen. There's going to be a wind blowing, a little bit of a tailwind. It's going to be great, Matt. When do they go to Colorado next? I might just make a trip out to Colorado to see him hit there.
He's going to hit the scoreboard over there. He's going to crush it.
Oh, he's going to hit it over the rock pile. Oh, man. I want to go there so bad. See, hit it up into the mile-high seats. Hell yeah.
I mean, he seems like one of those guys who, all these pitchers trying to get their breaking balls, their sliders to spin more. They try to go to the outside. It doesn't quite get all the way out there. Franmil Reyes, as we know, can reach over and get it and hit it 1,000 feet opposite field.
I think he's going to...
He's going to benefit a lot from the sticky stuff.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He's going to... He's gonna. I think he's gonna have a nice return to form, as they say.
Oh yeah, he's all rested up and ready to smash
things. So they're not throwing good breaking pitches anymore? Interesting, and then very interesting.
Yeah, because he went down when they were all still that was in the peak of it, and then now it's
exactly. People were still spinning right up, and now it's so what? Oh, the good ones are still
this
good.
Comes but back this is easy. Why was it so hard before? I can just hit this all day.
Man, wait, what's going on here? I'm hitting 375. Home run every other at bat.
There was I think it was a Forbes writer. He had a graph of the average spin rate by month. In 2018, it was going up. In 2019, it was going up. 2020 jumped a little bit. Beginning of 2021, it was way up. And then at May, it just dropped straight down to below 2018 is how low it is now, which I mean, fine, good. If you can pitch.
I guess it kind of, it has become.
Pitching was fine in 2017, 2018, wasn't it? Before.
I remember 2014 being a dead ball, one of the worst offensive seasons ever. And then they put in the rabbit ball. Maybe they just stop fucking with the ball. I don't know, Matt.
Wouldn't that be great if they just did that? Just, I don't know.
Hey, guys, that was some consistency. No, that's so fun.
Let's change it up every single time. Franmil will be back soon. He obviously hasn't played since May 22nd. Crushed that ball in AAA. He's on track to, I guess, be activated by Saturday, according to Ryan Lewis on Twitter. So he'll be back at DH. I don't think that changes a whole lot for him because they're basically using it as an off day now because Jesus Ramirez plays there once in a while. They just kind of put people there who you could use a half day off, which is kind of nice. I mean, I'll have the Franmil Reyes production over everything any day, but just kind of having an extra spot to put somebody in and still keep him in the lineup is nice.
Well, I mean, you can let him play defense.
Do we, Marin? We've seen this happen. I mean, it's great. I love it. Because remember, his thing is, you can tell he can do good routes. He runs, he knows when the ball's going, but he cannot get that body moving in time. He's got a build-up time to it.
It's like a freight train,
But you remember, was it this year? I can't remember anymore if it was last year. No, because they had the DHL last year, so it must have been this year. But, he runs decent routes. He has the mind for an outfielder, but he's just so damn big and he can't get over there in time. And it's hilarious and I love it, but I don't know if I want him out there over putting Oscar McCullough or whoever. Yeah. I mean, Rosario's there for now.
Maybe he has a preternatural ability to read balls off the wall. You know what? He could be a second coming of Manny Ramirez. It's sluggish, but you know, crafty back there,
Just wait till you bounce off the wall.
But then and gun people down when they're trying to stretch it out. Cause you also have a cannon for an arm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, he's undoubtedly going to be good when he comes back. But now the other one, Roberto Perez, hasn't played since May 3rd. That was a few weeks after getting hit by a James Karinchak pitch and fracturing his finger. He just kept on playing. It's fine. You don't need fingers. They're good.
Whatever. He's got nine. He's got 10
or 11. He's got nine other ones. Yeah. Just wrap it up.
Yeah.
But yeah. He'll be. He'll be back.
Catcher? Come on.
He's rehabbing in Akron. Now him coming back. I know Austin Hedges, for the love of everything, cannot hit to save his life. But
no,
I have had a ton of fun having him as the primary catcher with Rene Rivera's backup. Just because, I mean, first of all, I think Austin Hedges is almost equally as good as Roberto Perez behind the plate. Maybe he's not as good at handling the staff yet because he doesn't know him, and that's kind of like Roberto's thing. But also Austin Hedges is so fun. He's got those eyes that are he looks like he's going to kill you every second of his life. And yeah. You can see it from the mask too, which is great. But like hearing him before the game when he talks about setting guys up, like, you know, he knows what he's talking about and he's helping these guys through a lot of things. So I'm glad they have him. I get why they paid two pitchers a big percentage of their payroll as they did, because it's clearly that important. Or catchers, not pitchers. But yeah, Austin Hedges, he's super intense. I think he knows what he's doing, which I think that's a good combination. If you're as intense as he is, but you're also smart about it, I think he's a really good catcher back there. But good Lord, he cannot hit. And I think having a catcher that could hit even like 2019 Roberto Perez would be amazing right now. But I mean, I just don't know that Austin Hedges could ever get there, but also I like having Austin Hedges. I'm sure I like having Roberto back too, because he's always been one of my favorite players on the team, just because of how good he is on defense. But it's going to be kind of weird not having Austin Hedges back there. I haven't hated it, is I guess what I'm getting around to, is the fact that I'll be glad when Roberto Perez is back, just because it's good to have two catchers. Sorry, Rene Rivera, but you're fine, but you're not Roberto Perez or Austin Hedges. Like, what do you want? He's what, like 39, something like that. And he came out, he's doing fine considering for what they called him.
Yeah, no, for, but, I mean, no problems, you know.
Yeah, but I'll be glad to have the two guys back. And I would assume, like, I thought when they traded for Austin Hedges, he was basically, they saw him as a younger Roberto Perez. And that was basically the start of the end for Roberto. And I think this kind of accelerated it. They see that if Roberto can't hit, if there's nothing there in his bat left, you might as well have Austin Hedges, who also can't hit and is younger and cheaper, and he's going to be around more. So,
I agree.
I'm happy Roberto is coming back and giving depth, but I've liked Austin Hedges.
It's an upgrade simply because no more Rene Rivera, who's again fine, but like I think that, you know, as Cleveland fans, we've been spoiled, but also I think we've been trained a little bit to understand what a good catching actually looks like over the set. You know, it's really since Yan Gomes. I mean, we went through a lot of bad years with Victor Martinez and then Carlos Santana and Lou Marcin and who else? Some other stinkers. But anyway,
I think we forgot how bad Carlos Santana was behind the plate. Like, I looked at some old articles about it, and oh my God, he was so
no, bad. He was really bad. And like Victor Martinez was also really bad, like very bad behind the plate. Good arm, but like anyway. Hedges has been great, I think. He frames well, blocks well. I don't think he's as good. I don't think he's as good as Roberto Perez is behind the plate. I think part of it, obviously, you said knowing the pitchers. But I don't think he blocks as well because he's not as big. Like, I don't think he's as thick and wide. But it hasn't been bad. And now there will be even less of a drop-off, I guess, when you have to bring in your backup catcher. Maybe having him kind of come in every fifth day will make him not quite as good, but at the same time, he's had enough time to get to know all the pitchers in some way or other, so it won't even be like a bit of a drop-off or anything like that. And maybe there's one pitcher that likes working with him, so he'll just be the assigned catcher for that guy. Like
I mean, Perez that was Roberto and Trevor Bauer for a while.
Exactly, there. Yeah. So like it creates a built-in day off for the other catcher. And then that young pitcher is comfortable and able to grow. So,
yeah.
It'll be, again, if Perez comes back and starts hitting again, he was hitting the ball very hard. Like, I remember his peripherals, maybe I'm misremembering this, but his peripherals were all, like, good. He just kept on finding gloves and he got hurt, which probably just ended up sapping power and everything else, too. So,
yeah.
Again, Hedges has been, you know, again, dreadful behind the plate, or dreadful at the plate, but I mean, Perez has also been bad at the plate. So you're just kind of used to it. And you understand, as, you know, someone who watches Cleveland enough, we understand that the overall value is much greater of a great defensive catcher than we can even quantify or think of. Yeah,
and you did not miss any catchers. Thinking back the old ones, who do you think had the fourth most games behind catcher between 2009 and 2021? It's gonna be obvious when you hear
the fourth most.
Yeah, because it's Yan Gomes, Roberto Perez, Lou Marcin are the top three. Which would be Marcin.
It's not Carlos Santana.
It's not Carlos Santana, and it's not Victor Martinez.
There was someone else?
Wait, why is Carlos not even? Hold on, maybe it is Carlos.
Who is it? Tell me who. Tell me now. I demand
Chris,
it.
Chris Jimenez.
Oh yeah, Chris Jimenez. Okay, yeah. He was again. Yeah. He was fine. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, all these guys have one thing in common: they can't hit worth a damn. Or it's amazing. Either they hit real well and they can't play the position at all, or the other way around: they can't hit at all and they play the position like a god.
And I think we've learned that's what Cleveland values, and I think they might end up being right in that. Like, if you can, it helps to have like a healthy Fran Morais and Jose Ramirez hitting, and maybe an outfield. If you have all that, you can just sort of give up the offensive spot of your catcher for a good defender. But
I think a team. I'll be honest. I think that a team could win a World Series with a catcher like Roberto Perez, as long as they have a hitter of the talent level of Ramirez and another one of the talent level of what's his name, Reyes, but then everyone else has to be pretty good too. That's why I've been excited about seeing like Harold Ramirez. There's just too many gaps right now. Like if Bobby Bradley continues to be good, but like other than that, it's just you need two really great hitters, and everyone else has to be either average or slightly above average, and then you can have one other another defensive ace as your center fielder or something like that. But I think that's a team like that with good pitching. You know,
I mean, that was the Cardinals with. I mean, Yadier Molina was a little bit better in the mid 2000s.
But he had a couple great years. But exactly. Yeah, that's basically what they were doing. I mean, but exactly, yeah. Like, someone who can create much more value than you can even quantify. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right, Merritt. That's going to do it for us this week. If you haven't already, follow us on iTunes, Spotify, where you listen to podcasts. Leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. Follow us on Twitter at Cover the Corner, on Facebook, Covering the Corner. Of course, coveringthecorner.com. Follow me on Twitter at Matt RLY. Follow Merritt at Merrill Lynch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. And that's going to do it for this week. Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll be there.